This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 194. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Bruce to the Court of Owls, you're out of order! Challengers assemble, birds versus office drones, and when is a toy boat not a toy boat? This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, February 19th, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, and you can subscribe via iTunes where you could leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Batman number 6 by Snyder and Capullo. It's Talon versus Batman in the Court of Owls. Bruce is very badly hurt. I really don't understand how he could actually function.
Well, I think it's obvious that he couldn't have. This is just a stupid comic.
The court is asked how he should be killed, and a small girl with an owl mask and a dolly just says, "Hurt him more." Bruce sees this picture of Alan Wayne, and he realizes he has to fight for the citizens of Gotham.
See, and I just going to interrupt here.
Yeah.
Are those really people, or is he just imagining things? Well, or because later on they look like really tiny, or
right. We don't know if Bruce is drugged still. Is this anything that's actually even happening? But he manages to take out Talon, and then he sets off this explosion and manages to escape into the sewers. And in the end, he's trapped under glass, and he ends up sinking into the water. And we learn there's no reason to worry about Talon, because there's plenty more of him, because we end up seeing this room of coffins or something, and so somehow those are all Talons. We don't understand.
So there were a couple things I really didn't like about this.
Yeah.
First of all, yes, Batman is so injured that these so-called people could come down and, like, start eating him or whatever. And the picture of Alan Wayne inspires him to get up and fight some more. I think he was too far gone at that point. Then he does kill Talon. You know, he leaves him for dead and the other people kill him. Bruce Wayne, Batman, I thought, didn't kill people. Now, maybe it was just his state. I don't know. Or maybe he realized Talon wasn't really a person. I don't know. But I didn't like that.
Well, we pretty much assume that this is all being, at the very least, heightened by whatever drugs are going through Bruce's system. So we don't know how much of this is reality, if any of it's reality, he's just in a drugged state imagining all these things. I know you don't like the title, but I really do love what they're doing with this title.
And I'm glad you love it. That's great, but I don't have to.
DC Universe Presents number 6 by DiDio and Ordway. So this is a new storyline with the Challengers of the Unknown. This is a team created by Jack Kirby, although there's a little bit of debate as to who else might have been involved, but generally it's accepted that Jack Kirby did create the characters. Their first appearance was in Showcase number 6, 1957. They were the third characters created in Showcase and were directly after the first appearance of the Flash. So the team includes...
So these are the people who are in the original team?
Yeah, the original one.
Okay.
Ace Morgan, a pilot, Red Ryan, a daredevil, Rocky Davis, who's this fighter, and Prof. Haley, who's a scientist, who all managed to survive a plane crash. And they realize that because they somehow survived, they're living on borrowed time. So they just band together on hazardous adventures. Because they're like, well, we were supposed to die anyways, so
let's
why not?
Tempt fate.
Yes. And their logo is an hourglass because of time running out. This other character, June Robbins, who's an archaeologist, joins them later. They went through a lot of different versions and reboots of this character set. And at one point, they're referenced in Elseworlds. They're also in New Frontier. And for a while, the idea was that they predated the new Silver Age heroes coming out. Of course, now they're in the new continuity. None of that matters. In this new version, it's a different take where they're on a reality show and the plane crashes, which I thought was a very interesting take and a more modernistic take other than just, well, they just happened to survive a plane crash.
I thought, boy, this really is a good reboot. I mean, you know, they're taking it over. They're updating the origin story for today. It's actually something that could happen, you know. It's...
Right. I'm not really sure how well DiDio will do. That's generally a sign that nobody else wanted to do this if Dan DiDio ends up writing it. Again, I am not a big fan of the publishers jumping in and doing this stuff. Why don't you just go be the publisher? But I have to say, I do love the Jerry Ordway artwork throughout all this.
I really like this. I like the way they threw in Nanda Parbat. One thing was that the pilot seems to be going to be a bad guy rather mm-hmm. than part of the group.
Right.
So there was a lot of interesting things in here. I did like this.
Birds of Prey number 6 by Swierczynski and Pina. So there's almost two stories going on here where the first half of the story is all about this office drone, this guy working in an office. It's about these normal people that are going to their day-to-day jobs, but they actually have these physical triggers in their heads that they can be called up by the bad guy to be assassins. And the birds have to try to stop them without just killing them because
they're innocent.
They're innocents. But at the same time, at any point, the trigger could be set off and suddenly they're assassins.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be very careful about this. And it takes multiple attempts, but they manage to knock him out long enough to remove the trigger. And then they turn around and use him as bait to catch the others in this office. So he just goes back to his cubicle and he's got a little Bluetooth headset in or whatever, giving him instructions as to what to do. He's like, well, what do I do? Well, do whatever you normal do, you know, play Angry Birds, whatever you're doing.
What do actuaries do?
So Choke, the bad guy, activates everyone in the office. So now they're surrounded by this group of assassins. They're trying to save the guy they sent in the first place. But Black Canary seems to be happy about it because she says, ah, now we have you.
We seem to have figured out who you are based on the information provided. I like this story, but it does seem a little unlikely to me that somebody could secretly program so many people to be assassins.
In the same office, especially.
Yes.
It seems like you could do one person per office and nobody would really necessarily notice. But to just do everybody in the office, wow, that's...
And if you use nursery rhymes as the trigger, wouldn't you want to avoid having parents?
That's a good point, because you could easily trigger themselves, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Fables number 114 from Vertigo by Willingham, Buckingham, Leoloa, and McManus. So the Cubs in Toyland storyline begins. And the Cubs, who of course are the kids of Snow White and Bigby, who are also half, I wouldn't really call them werewolves.
They're part wolf.
Part wolf.
And part supernatural being.
Right. And they're just running rampant around the house. And one of them, Therese, seems very scared about something. And Snow's trying to get her to open up as to what she's scared about, and Snow really doesn't understand it. She explains that her toy boat won't let her play with the other toys. And meanwhile, Winter, one of the other cubs, is having these bad dreams and telling Bigby about she sees herself as the adult North Wind who invokes fear in everyone, but she doesn't think it's a dream. She thinks this is what's going to actually happen. She says she's seeing the future.
Now, at this point, both Bigby and Snow sort of discount what their kids are saying.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine that you would do that if your kids are supposedly these powerful supernatural beings.
You would think so. So later, Teresa's sleeping, and the toy boat wakes her up, tries to get her to play with them, and she convinces them, well, let's wait till morning. And we cut to a Fables contingent, including old King Cole, are at Castle Dark back in Manhattan, and this is going to be the new Fable Town, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to use it for and how they're going to use it. And they find Mrs. Spratt in a dungeon. They don't know who she is because she's thin, so they don't recognize her. And somehow she was left in a dungeon at some point.
Well, I'm sure she set that up.
Well,
she knew they were coming.
Right. So we go back to Therese, who finds this small unfrozen stream because they're up, you know, the
northern New York.
Yeah. And she drops the toy boat in this small piece of unfrozen water. And the toy boat becomes full-sized.
I had a thought on that.
Yeah.
What if she actually shrank?
Hmm.
Because remember she said the stream seemed very big?
Oh, that's a very good point. Yeah, how would the stream get bigger? Maybe she just got smaller. And so they're off on this adventure, but all is not what it seems as you see the mirror image of the toy boat in that last shot. And the mirror image looks very evil.
Yes.
And then there's a backup story. They're starting this revolution in Oz, which is just really the beginning of the story where the rebels have managed to steal this cache of magical artifacts. And it's also a story about how Oz has become so incredibly bureaucratic. They're like, oh, got to do another inventory. They want us to do it. Okay, fine. And then they find all these magical items are gone.
Yes. Now, is that going to be a new story arc shortly, or do you know?
I suspect they're going to do it as a backup and just have that as a several issues. I don't know how long they're going to run that.
Okay. And I'm just interjecting here that Fairest is going to start very shortly.
Next month.
Yay.
There's a lot of stuff coming out from Vertigo next month. There's Fairest. There's Saucer Country. There's the
Dead Edwardians.
Dead Edwardians,
or
right.
Deadwardians.
Deadwardians. So there's a lot of stuff coming out from Vertigo. They're starting several titles, which kind of makes sense because several of the existing Vertigo titles are ending or just ended. DMZ just ended. Northlanders is about to end. So the cupboard's a little bare in terms of ongoing titles.
So good time to jump into Vertigo.
Exactly. Before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay, go.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
No.
Music related?
Yes.
Wow. Well, okay, then it's Whitney Houston.
Yeah, I didn't figure it would take you too long. All right.
So
you only get a music cover if someone dies.
That's apparently the rule, yes.
Yes.
All right, want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including Mindy's Comic A Day blog and my blog where I'm talking about the Filmation Aquaman series. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.